Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that beauty careers are projected to increase, and that's what motivated me to want to do a segment on the show about beauty careers, hair, makeup, skincare. But yesterday, as part of my preparation for the show, I did a real-world check. And I walked up and down College Avenue in Berkeley and Oakland with my doggy Einstein, and I found a zillion hair cutters and day spas and a hair removal place and an eyebrow stitching place, a number of nail places, all within just like a half a mile walk. And nearly all of them were empty, or nearly empty. Bureau of Labor Statistics come from the professional association's self-reports who have an interest in saying that their field is growing, because we all want to go on an upward trajectory career, not a downward trajectory career. And that gave me pause, but I was given even greater pause. Oh, I should say this. The one place that was packed, Supercuts. It's the place where I get my hair cut because I'm a cheapskate. And Elizabeth, if you're listening, hi, you're great. Oh, there was another place, by the way, that had a lot of people. It was a place that had a sign that said nail salon, but in there were like 12 women all getting foot massages. So this highly unscientific study of where the pockets of opportunity are in the beauty space, personal maintenance space, whatever you want to call it, are foot massages and cheap haircuts. But that wasn't what really threw me. What really threw me was that I had very carefully, about a month in advance, those of you who had heard the promo last week or visited the KLW website, know I got this really expert person who was coming on the show to talk about careers in skincare and hair and nails and all the rest of it. And she canceled. And the various replacements who I interviewed did not feel worthy of you, my dear KLW listeners. So I decided that the single best option, by far, was to recruit a guinea pig. Somebody who is not in a skincare, hair, esthetician, or other sort of career, but maybe the world's greatest user of same. She is looking right now like she is about to be in a play. She has full makeup, hair. And what's really bizarre is that, well, her hair, I think everybody, by the way, we don't normally have a studio audience, but we do have a studio audience today of the wonderful KELW listeners who were kind enough to donate to KELW to come to have a brunch with me, and I will even name them right now, Caroline Murakama and Mari Tsumikawa, if I screwed it up, I hope I didn't, Alan Gold, Elaine Leeming, Sarah Bridge, and Chris Fung. Anyway, we have a studio audience who indeed can verify. Now, honestly, don't applaud if she looks like the person who has spent the most on personal maintenance, skincare, makeup, or whatever. Clap. Raise your hand. Clap your hands. See? Okay. And there's only six people here. You can see. I'm not telling you a lie. In any case, yeah, she's got this day job, this little day job. She's a Napa County Superintendent of Schools on the state superintendent's cabinet. She was just named one of the 40 top technology superintendents in America. But today she's here as a consumer of skincare, healthcare, beauty products. And we are going to, lest you think that this is just going to be humor, I'm going to ask her hard questions about who she uses, what professionals she does use in the area of beautification, how she made the choices, and therefore there should be lots of career implications for you or anyone who you love who's listening. And without further ado, Dr. Barbara Nemko, welcome to the show, oh beautiful one.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Okay. So, you know, although this is radio, I decided that we would actually come in with props, partly because I knew we had the studio audience and whatever. So I think that maybe we will start, we'll take one part of your body at a time. Let's start at the top. Let's start with hair. And again, this is a career show. This is a local thing. You have a veritable phalanx of people in charge of your hair. Right. Would you tell us about Sandy, your hair cutter? We'll start with her.
Well, Sandy has been cutting my hair for, I don't know, 25 years. I love her.
Why?
Because, well, I hate my hair. Let's start with that.
Why?
Which probably makes me not different than a lot of women.
Why?
Because my hair is naturally frizzy and unruly. And growing up in New York in a humid climate with frizzy hair before hair torturing devices were invented for mass market, I was a mess.
Now, I would imagine many progressive women would say, how dare you mess with your natural self, you know, whether it be frizzy or straight. You're an instrument of sexism to be focusing on such things as straightening hair or whatever. What would you say to such folks?
Knock yourselves out. You can present yourself the way you want to, and I will present myself the way I want to.
Is the following a serious and legitimate response? The human species is visual and lookist, and we make judgments based on the clothing people wear, our age, our race, gender, sexual orientation, all kinds of things. And unless we are willing to pay a price, a big price, we owe it to ourselves to look within reason as well as we can so that our substance can be judged on its merit, and not prejudged based on trivia, like whether your hair is, you know, is not quite right.
Well, we can say anything we want. We can't change other people's reactions and the way they look at you and what they think. But that's not really why I do it. I do it because we are all children in grown-up bodies. And when you grow up as a child and you are a very funny-looking child, it makes you self-conscious. And in my grown-up role, I can't afford to be self-conscious and shy. I was a very shy kid because I was funny-looking. So for me, looking good gives me the confidence to be able to speak out. And I have to do that in my job. And I am very outspoken in my job. I have to go and talk to the state legislature. I have to go and talk to the federal government
and
about policies that relate to education.
Right.
And if I'm going to be crawling into my little shell, I'm not going to be an effective spokesperson.
Let's go back to Sandy. How do you recall, it's been 25 years, but do you recall how you chose her? Because there is a hairdresser under every rock. And so, and there are many who are sitting there, as I was walking on College Avenue, there were many hairdressers who were kind of chatting with each other, waiting for customers to come in. And yours, Sandy, is very busy. I know you can hardly get an appointment with her. How did you recall how you chose her and why you stayed with her for 25 years?
My recollection? Supercuts.
Oh, she worked.
She did originally.
Interesting.
That's my recollection. Now, you understand my recollections aren't so good all the time. But yes, I think it was Supercuts. Huh. And in Supercuts, typically you walk in and they just give you the someone. And because my hair is such a challenge for me, when I found somebody who seemed to know how to deal with it and who was able to cut it in a way that I could deal with it, I followed her. And then she left Supercuts and opened up her own salon in Alameda, We Are Hair. And so even though I live in Napa, I drive to Alameda once a month to get my hair cut.
Shows you how important your looks are. And
yes.
Again, from a career perspective, dear listeners, see, I'm a pig. I you know, it takes me about 4 seconds to go from bed to ready to see my next client.
We are the odd couple.
We're the odd couple.
But, in many ways.
But recognize that for many people, looks are so potent, so important, that even as a busy person as Barbara is willing to drive from Napa to Alameda every month to get her hair done. So this is a compelling interest for many people in the public. So if you are looking for, if you are aesthetically oriented, careers in the area, whether esthetician, which is focusing primarily on skin care, hair removal, nails, you know, face, everything, makeup, all the rest of it, is even in, it's pretty recession-proof. Because many people, even if they are down to not their last dime, but their last $1,000, are not going to stop buying their makeup. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely.
The people who are in my studio audience here, raise your hand if you believe that makeup ends up being considered as something you just wouldn't give up unless you were desperate. Raise your hand. Mixed. Mixed. I'm not getting a...
Well, we have a bunch of guys here, so they're probably not going to vote for keeping their makeup.
You know what? There's makeup for men, and there are some men who wear makeup.
Yeah, not so many. Yeah. We have three women here. One said it was important, and two said, not so much.
Okay. So, in addition...
Of course, they're gorgeous. You know, all the women here are gorgeous.
Right, of course.
But some of us work harder.
So... Let's leave your hair. Is there anything else about Sandy the haircutter that might have career implications? How she works with you? What makes you stay with her for 25 years other than that she can deal with your frizz?
She's very personable. You don't want to go to somebody who doesn't remember who you are and care about you. And when you've been with somebody for such a long period of time, I remember when she got pregnant with her son, who now is ready to graduate from high school. And so we also have talked over the years about her son's needs in school, and I've tried to help and match him with different courses or instructors or whatever. So it's like it's a good friend.
Okay. It really does make sense. It's you know, sometimes when I, for example, if I go to the doctor, I feel like all I really want is their expertise. But in the end, it does matter to me whether they seem to care about me as a person. It's irrational because what I should care about is the most competent professional, but we're human beings. And so that emotional component in whatever career is very important.
Bedside manner.
Speaking of that, by the way, you know, there were studies that were done, there's usual, of most careers with work satisfaction studies, and haircutter always comes up near the top because of the relationship aspect. You succeed with nearly every client, and it's, you know, short, fun interactions. It's a positive, upbeat thing. You're dealing with somebody they're all coming out better after they finish, unlike being an oncologist where not everybody comes out so good of their appointment. So it's a very, very rewarding career. The thing to watch out for is carpal tunnel syndrome because the repetitive motion can be a problem, and also back problems because you're leaning over. So your ergonomics have to be really good. So, but Sandy is not the only person on your hair care team. Who else do you have?
Well, you have to have someone to color your hair if you get past 50.
You have to?
You have to.
There
are people, well, some people choose to let their hair go gray or white or whatever color it might be. That does age you. And in a society where it's probably better when you look younger and the demographic that you're dealing with is younger, why would I want to deliberately present myself as older?
I lament the fact that we do what we are ageist, but in general, because statistically, on average, younger people are more current technology-wise, they have greater energy, they're less likely to have health problems, etc., and they're usually cheaper, that statistically it does help to look younger. I'm going to make an admission here in front of all the listeners. I color my hair. Because
I'm shocked.
It is nothing. It is an $8 box of L'Oreal Excellence. Takes no time. It's a half hour. I do it in the shower. I shower it in. And, you know, if for little effort, I can, again, let my substance reveal itself and not be prejudged, why not?
Don't have to convince me.
Okay. So how did you pick your hair colorist? And what do you have to say from a career perspective about hair colorists?
I picked her by recommendation, and this time I have to admit it needed to be someone in Napa because there are only so many trips I can make to go back and forth to the Bay Area. Same deal. She works with me. I can explain what I want, and basically all I want is to look like I looked 20 years ago, and so I don't want some shocking color. I'm not going to have purple stripes in my hair. And so we just work together, and she's found a color that I think looks pretty natural, and that's what we do. Also, very pleasant, mm-hmm. Nice place to go to, great conversation. I've been with her for a couple of years now. And most important, the problem, I always did my hair at home with the same $8 box. And I ruined the white carpet once when I dropped a cap with developer and discovered that, developer may not look like much when you drop it on white carpet, but after about half an hour, you have 9,000 very dark brown spots that do not come out. So it was pretty expensive to have to recarpet the house for coloring my hair. And two, You don't get as many variations when you do it from a box. So, but what she lets me do, I have no patience to have somebody put color on my hair and sit there for 45 minutes waiting for it to take. And so she just puts it on my hair and I go home.
Right. What always struck me, you know, it's easy to talk about the soft skills that are needed. But what has impressed me when you describe your colorist to me is she's very patient. She takes every strand or every little section of hair, and there are subtle differences so that it doesn't, it's not one color throughout, but it's, it looks extremely natural as well. So in the end, I suspect that this personality or not, it's the fact that she takes the time to create all those highlights and natural look that, that you couldn't do yourself out of a
right.
model is really what's the end of the decision. So ultimately, it's competence. Is that fair?
Yes, competence, but you also have to be nice. If she was not nice, I would find someone else who would be competent.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We're talking about careers in beauty, whether they be skin care or hair care or nail care or even massage or whatever. That's what we're talking about. And what I think I will do, in a few minutes I will give out the phone number if you've got any questions or comments. I was expecting to have a true an expert on careers in this, but she canceled last second. So we thought we would try to discuss this issue from the perspective of a consumer and discuss any consumer career implications that exist. So you also go to people for do you go to people for skin care or makeup consultations or any of that stuff?
I've probably done all of them a couple of times, but not on a regular basis.
So let's talk instead about products. I invited you to bring in the devices, lotions and potions that you use daily to make yourself look like, and I swear on my life, dear listeners, she's really beautiful. In her age range, she's at the 99.9th percentile in the 50-plus category. So it really is remarkable.
Of course, you're getting older and your eyes aren't as good as they used to
be. Yes, that's true. But I think it may be instructive to have you describe take each item one at a time out and describe what it is, where you bought it, you know. And
you
any
really want me to do this?
Desperately.
Okay. You want to start with hair or you want to start with
skin? I am in your capable hands.
Okay, well, let's start with hair. So I didn't bring my hair dryer. Everybody has a hair dryer. But I did bring my two hair torturing devices. I have one that's a flat iron.
Make sure you're talking to the microphone.
And one that's a curling iron. So they're similar. I use them both to take the frizz out of my hair. And the curling iron is more labor-intensive because you have to take each little section, where the flat iron, you can make it go a little faster by getting a whole big bunch of hair and doing it at one time.
Faster is very much relative. How much time do you spend on your hair every day?
Ooh, at least 40 minutes.
Continue.
Okay. So that's hair. Two hair torturing devices plus blow dryer. Okay, skin. So you get out of the shower and you have your naked face. So then you use toner. And I'm not exactly sure what toner does. Because I don't really know exactly what it does.
It's expensive. It's Clinique. That costs a lot of money. Why, if you don't even know what the hell it does, why do you use it?
It's clarifying lotion. It clarifies me. I don't know. It does something. I think it tightens the pores.
Again, okay. Dear listeners, again, the career takeaway here is how come that looks is so compelling for many people that even if they don't know what the hell the product does, they buy it.
It's pretty, though. It's purple, and it looks nice in the medicine cabinet.
Pretty. I am amazed. Yes, the lotion is this lovely little lavender, but it's got this ugly green Clinique type. No designer person in a million years would ever match those two colors, puke green with lavender. I don't understand.
Okay, but it's not for looks. It's for what it does. Actually, no.
But you said you don't know what it does.
I do know. It gets off the remaining makeup that you didn't get off with whatever soap or cleanser that you use. So you don't want to have old makeup in your pores, and that's what it does. And you can see that on the cotton ball when you finish going over your face, that there is residual makeup.
I got to buy some immediately.
So then, there is take the day off. Now that gets the residual eye makeup off from under your
eyes.
Wait
a minute. You can't... I understand it's probably some alcohol thing that removes the makeup. You need you need a separate one for eyes,
yes,
and separate one.
This is gentler than that. That's harsher. So that's for eyes.
Got it.
Okay.
We had to take out a second mortgage to pay for all of her products.
Okay, then we have to start getting ready to, now that we've taken it all off, we have to get ready to start putting things
but
on.
But of course.
So we start with...
Notice the use of the royal we. I do not. She does.
Okay. We start with this little item, and this is a rollerball thingy. It's called Revitalizing Eye Roll-On, and you put that on your eyes, and it makes them more moist and puffs them out so you don't have so many wrinkles.
Why don't you just get plastic surgery and get it done with one, all at one time?
Well, I haven't got time. Then there's, this is called Eye Lift, made by many different companies, and that you put also under your eyes, and they have, there are two different things in this one little container, and one goes on top on your eye, not your eyelids, but the brow part over your eyes.
What's the difference between this and the other one?
I don't know. I think they're probably redundant. And then...
Okay, dear listeners, I need now... This is the time for me to interject a story. My sister has made a, let's just say, a comfortable living, more than comfortable. So comfortable, she's a pasha, in makeup. And what she did was she was selling toilet paper for Scott Toilet Paper when she got out of college.
That's
right,
with her
typical degree in communications. And she was stocking the shelves with toilet paper. And, of course, she didn't want to do that forever. And she heard a statistic that changed her life. The single product with the highest profit margin of all that's legal is makeup. That $15 lipstick is just a bunch of cheap wax and colorant, which cost about 15 cents and another 40 cents for the container. So it costs 50 cents. You sell $15. That is a 3,000% profit margin, more than that, 3,333.33%. So she decided to start her own line. She found out there were only 5 cosmetic manufacturers in the whole country, at least there were back then, and one of them sells to individuals. She simply slapped her, she made up a name, which was really cute, called Let's Make Up. On the containers, they had her. They made up a line of hers. What they slapped her label on. She went into a very fancy beauty salon in Livingston, New Jersey, that had some space in the front, and said, "How would you like me to attract you with more customers? Let me set up my little table here. You'll get more customers, and I'll make money." She ended up doing that rent free. She's also beautiful and really good at selling and putting on, like you were saying, 87 different products. And she had a little sheet where she would check off each product that was used. And each of these women would walk out spending $200 or $300 worth of the crap that she had put on that cost her like pennies per. And so, again, from a career perspective, dear listeners, the compulsion to look good is so powerful, so recession-proof, that if you are at all aesthetically oriented, if you can all relate to this, that, you know, we live in a Bay Area where everybody wants to be in just a few fields: the environment, entertainment, healthcare. We don't normally think about the beautification industry as viable, and yet it is one of the most recession-proof and offshoring-proof, because you're not going to offshore your makeup artist to Bangalore. Just a career thought.
Well, I thought it was interesting because you said you walked up and down College Avenue and places were empty. Mm-hmm. The places that I go to are never empty. When I get my nails done, it's packed.
That's the 80-20 rule. In every field, most, whether it be real estate agents or even doctors, there are some doctors who are eager to take new patients, and others you can't see them for 3 months. And so that is the case. So in the end, one of the other career takeaways is, please, even if a field is interesting or growing, in the end, your success is not just going to be your personality. You've got to be a rock star. You got to be a rock star in expertise. You've got to be a rock star in personality, and you may have to market.
Well, the nail place is a really good example. The place that I went to and still go to, they were losing customers because they hadn't really revitalized the look of the place in a long time. Really.
Right. I believe.
And so they sold, and a new younger couple came in, and they just made cosmetic changes. They repainted the whole thing. They put up some new pictures, brought in some plants, and they got new massage chairs. And by the way, when you get a pedicure, that part of it is that foot massage. That's just part of getting a pedicure.
Oh, I see.
It goes with, and that's one of the great joys of getting a pedicure. Mm. But now they're totally packed, and truly it was only cosmetic. They're still doing the same thing the other place did before them.
Now, I'm looking at, I don't want to spend much more time, but going
through
stuff.
God.
But I really am looking at, I swear it is, I'm not exaggerating, about 30 items of skincare stuff. And then there's the hair color. So, you know, one of the listeners to the show right now just sent in a question. Do you worry about the toxicity of the hair dye and all the lotions and potions? These are not exactly organic, sustainably harvested, local, you know, stuff. This is like, you know, DuPont, you know, incarnate. You worry about that at all?
I have to say, of all the things I worry about, this is not one of them.
Okay.
Nope.
Okay. Let's give out the phone number. Now is a good time. So, we are stipulating a priori, up front, that we are not experts in beautification careers. We were forced to, last minute, make do. But I am a career counselor who's had a lot of clients, and Barbara is the ultimate consumer of health, skincare, beauty care professionals. So if you have a question or a comment related to the career aspect, especially because I'm mandated to stay as close to career stuff as I can, if you have especially a career related to the issues related to the beautification industry, I invite you to call. The phone number here, work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
I have one new product that I want to show you that you don't know that I have.
Okay.
And that is leg makeup. Leg makeup, you're saying. Why on earth would a human being have leg makeup?
Well, I have ugly legs. I could see why I'd anything to mask it.
Well, because in this new era where women have given up wearing pantyhose or stockings or anything like that, if you're past 50, your legs have lived. God bless them. They've been through a lot. They've helped birth children, and so you may have veins and lines and things. And this bare leg look is gorgeous on 20-year-olds, but that is what so clearly gives away your real age. I was at a fashion show once, and some woman who probably had 3 facelifts came trotting down the aisle. She looked fabulous, you know, great body, great clothes. And then you look down at her legs, and oh my God, you could see the varicose veins from the last row, and you're thinking, why on earth would you do that? So if you feel compelled to go bare-legged and you are past 50, I highly recommend leg makeup. You just spray it on and you look so much better.
Again, try to stay focused on career. It seems to me with all
that's
of
not these a career because I just buy it. Got nobody it. Puts it on for me.
But my point is, as I look through this enormous array, this is basically a shopping center versus full of stuff that you have with you here. Many people who care about their looks would be intimidated. They can't just go into Macy's and I'm going to buy this. And they're reluctant to use that Clinique lady in the green outfit because she's got her stuff to sell. I would think that there'd be a great market for somebody who is not affiliated with one particular brand, who's got a magical eye, who's really good, who can really help assess where, you know, what could make you look good without spending 40 minutes on hair and another hour on makeup or whatever. Have you ever heard of anybody who does that as a consultant?
I have.
And do they do well? Do you have an idea?
I think they do very well because I think they charge a lot of money. They usually are inside of beauty salons, You can get a consultation.
Right.
Now, your sister, of course, used to do that, and she made me over multiple times. It was always wonderful being with your sister in those days. Every time I saw her, she felt the need to make me over.
Right.
But I was very pale. I was wearing only beige cosmetics, and she was right, except that by the time she finished with me, I felt like I could have gone to Barnum & Bailey's circus
exactly,
as a clown with turquoise eyeshadow and dark everything. I mean, I looked ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And somebody even gave her a Yelp review and said they brought a bridal party in, and they all had to go home and wash their faces because she was still stuck in the 80s. So you need to be careful that they're not selling you everything that they put on you.
Now, you also have another consultant who's consulted with you about your makeup.
Oh, I know. You're so proud of yourself.
Well, should I be or should I not?
You made a minor change. Your sister taught me about lip liner, which was something I had never heard of. And you didn't like the color of lipstick that she gave me. You thought it was too brown and you moved
you
me
evil.
To a more red
yes,
color.
I so, moved her
yes,
from
you,
even
you
I,
subtle.
Who is aesthetically, you know, challenged, found that the bright red looks far better than brown red. So I'm not completely...
But your sister gets credit for the lip liner, an idea I've
enough
never
of this.
Heard of.
Let's the focus on the career. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is your ideally career-related comment or question related to the beauty industry and careers in beauty? Hello, it's you. Hi, you there? You have left us, so let us go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, it's you.
Hi, I just wanted to say that in this area where we're so environmentally conscious, one of the things that the people I work with know about is a wonderful website called Skin Deep. And you can look and see which cosmetics are environmentally safe and what products they have in them, so you know what you're putting on your skin, which is the largest organ in the body. And it's invaluable to have that kind of information when we don't really know, we can't really trust what these cosmetic companies are putting in their products. And that's it. That's all I wanted to do.
Well, thank you very much for the call. You know, as a statistician by nature, really, I'm always thinking probabilistically. And yes, it's very evil. Like you said, the Bay Area is very environmentally conscious. As a statistician, and I think, and this, I'm sharing this way of thinking merely because I think it's a useful way to approach almost all problems in the workplace and not. The FDA indeed requires, you know, extremely rigorous testing, and especially the large companies, the Procter and Gambles of the world, the Lever brothers, you know, they are so terrified of billion-dollar lawsuits and being shut down by the FDA or whatever, that they really do very, very carefully test products. Each individual subcomponent is tested on animals and computer models and human beings and trials and everything. The probability. Now, I wouldn't be such a big fan of small companies' products because they can, you know, the government just can't, doesn't have its tentacles out wide enough to look at every small company, and they wouldn't want to make them an example. But I believe, in my judgment, that just because a chemical does not occur naturally in the environment but is created, or some silicon dioxide, which does occur naturally, the probability that that is going to cause serious harm to you is remarkably low, and the costs very often of the alternative, all-natural, you know, organic makeup or whatever, the actual incremental increase in safety is so small, whereas the cost differential is a 100% certitude that it's going to cost you twice or three times as much. That's the kind of thing that I would think three times before just reflexively saying, "I'm going to go organic and local, you know, and alternative." Barbara, you're. What do you think?
I would probably take a look at that website and
sure.
just
Fair enough.
For interest, and I might make a change.
But it also, you know, I see so often in websites. I was reading the studies that said that chewing gum actually increases IQ for 5 to 10 minutes because the increased circulation that accrues from mastication. And but I didn't like the idea of eating, you know, having gum that was using a lot of chemicals or whatever, because there's a lot of chemicals in it. So I spent a half hour doing some pretty good Googling, and you can easily get fear-mongered into, you know, like aspartame. You know, the quantity of aspartame in those gums is so small, and the data is, you know, is never certitude. But we live in a probabilistic society, in the same way as, you know, it's crazy that we make people take off their shoes at the airport when the probability of that's going to be the what's going to get us is so small. It seems to me that once you start on the internet search, especially if you're looking at advocacy websites and not dispassionate websites like Mayo Clinic or whatever, I think you end up getting an less valid basis for making decisions. One guy's opinion. Let's go to the phones. They're all lighted up. I knew people would be interested in the beauty industry, for better or worse. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks. Yeah, the website, it's called EWG.org, and Google for EWG and cosmetics or skincare. And you'd be surprised that they do legally allow chemicals that have long-term hormonal disruption, you know, properties in it. You'd be surprised. Anyway, the website gives a really simple, easy tool. They cite all the studies for you. They've done all the research for you. They rate things from 1 to 10 or something. And then if your product you're looking at looks like one of the worst rated based on all their research, they give you an alternative that's rated A or B or
Great.
Something, which is green-coded. They make it really, really simple for you. And so we're talking about long-term You'd be surprised. I don't worry about these things at all. I just use these easy tools to find what, you know, has already been researched.
Thank you very much for the call. The same. It's interesting the percentage of KELU listeners focusing on this aspect. It's not surprising, I suppose. But again, I would, you know, when you hear the word long-term hormonal effects, I saw one of the people in the audience here, her eyes widened. What really is the extent of the hormonal effect? How toxic is it? What is the probability? What is the extent of it? Sure, you can label anything, make it simple and make it green and say we did a lot of research. I just think I would urge, maybe the most important takeaway, the hell with makeup, the hell with looks. The most important takeaway from this show, I believe, is to encourage us to think probabilistically. It's the most important thing we don't teach in school. The ability to evaluate research, the ability to assess probabilities, cost-effectiveness, risk-reward, that's critical. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hi. Hearing your wife talk is I'm going to take a few deep breaths. I'm really nervous to talk on the air. Reminding me how 5 years ago, okay, I'm in my mid-50s. 5 years ago, I started getting my esthetician's license because I realized that through some research I was doing for myself that we women are just wasting so much money on products that are ineffective and that women, by and large, don't read the ingredients. They aren't interested in reading the ingredients. They take the advice of someone in a department store. Things that your wife mentioned that she uses just make me want to bash my head against the wall because it seems like that, yeah, she's taken someone else's word for it. I started trying to get my esthetician's license because I actually, in the end, wanted to try to educate women about how to look at a label and also about that there really are only three major manufacturers of cosmetics in the large manufacturing. You know, you mentioned Procter & Gamble. There's a few others. So the same people that are making the expensive stuff are also making the cheap stuff, the stuff you get in, you know, in the department store, you can get for 5 or 10 times cheaper at the drugstore, made by the same company, just with different branding and labels.
Yep, that's true.
And Lancome also manufactures L'Oreal, so...
Yep. I'm going to interrupt you because I really do. I am mandated. I'm required to keep the show focused on career issues. And we've now we've taken this little slice of this issue a lot. And so I'm going to thank you for the call. And I'm only going to take calls now. If your call is not about a career-related aspect of the beauty industry, we're just too off topic, and I get in trouble when I deviate. So I'm trying to do the best I can to stay within the boundaries that I'm required to stay on the show. So let's go back to the phones. Please hang up if you are not talking about a career-related aspect of this. So welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you very much. Most of this focus has been on women and how they adjust their looks.
Right.
And then you mentioned that you use hair coloring.
Right.
Are there careers, not that I'm interested in one, but I'm just interested in the question.
Good question here.
Are there careers where the people in those careers are appealing to men, say, such as yourself, who uses...
Great question.
And I take it that for men is a much narrower field.
Yep.
I think that's
right. Yeah, I'm guessing, but they see that. Oh, first of all, 85% of all consumer spending is women, but particularly women tend to be more interested in aesthetics. On average, there's always exceptions. Believe me, I'm well aware, but I love narrow niches. I was transformed in my own thinking about the world when that book, The Long Tail, came out. People can make a fortune and do good for the world by focusing only on a small, narrow niche. And men, representing 49% of the population, even if only 1% of them are interested in enhancing their looks, and I believe it's a lot larger than that. I would think that a consultant who specialized in men, in hair, hairstyles, or age control, just posture, you know, looks are not just a matter of products. I think that would be a fabulous idea, because, alas, and I decry this tremendously, we are a lookist species, and that's just, it's relatively immutable, and you can educate all you want against lookism, but we have a, you know, it's a pretty tough nut to crack. We find that infants, newborn infants, will, when shown two pictures, one of which is a traditionally considered good-looking person, another a traditionally considered ugly person, will spend much more time staring at the good-looking person at infancy. So I think your idea is really excellent, and I, as usual, I know who you are, and I really love your calls. You're one of the intelligent callers on the show, and I want to let you know how much I value you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's take one more call, and I think maybe we're running this to the ground. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is your question or comment related to career issues related to the beauty industry?
Hi, Marty. Is this me on the air?
It is.
Oh, exciting. I love
Great.
Your show.
Thank you.
I listen to you guys every week.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a professional hair and makeup artist in the Bay Area.
Yay!
I have a lot of career comments. I've been doing this for 20 years, 14 of which in the Bay Area, and I can say it's an amazing career choice. I mean, the money is great. I work mostly on commercial photo shoots, which I haven't heard you mention so much. With photo shoots for web, online. I also do runway in New York. I work on a lot of videos and commercials, and on celebrities, and also sometimes private clients, and also weddings.
Now, hold on a second. Now, I know that most people who are in that field do not get to do all that cool stuff. Honestly, and I don't want you to be modest, what were the factors, there's always more than one, which has led you to be one of those successful makeup artists?
Well, I started in New York. I already established myself as a makeup artist in the freelance world in New York. I only worked at the makeup counters to subsidize my work as a freelance artist, and then I quit the counters as soon as possible. And I had some connections. I knew some people who worked at magazines, and I got into doing a lot of editorial, and I've traveled all over the world doing a lot of editorial, like India, Morocco, Vietnam.
I need to go back to the beginning. You were like millions of other makeup. New York is not the nirvana. Millions of, for example, I know a lot about the acting world. How many millions of actors go to New York and 99% of them come back with their tail between their legs 2 years later? You did not. You started in New York, and there was something you did that enabled you, either in skills or personality or connections. When you were at that makeup counter and you were doing it at Macy's and you were making over those people, what were you doing skill-wise, connections-wise, whatever-wise, that enabled you to be one of the small minority who went from that makeup counter to when you started doing the magazines and stuff?
Well, I mean, it didn't have anything to do with the makeup counter, because it wasn't the people that I was doing that gave me my break. I had an agent. And my agent would shop my.
How'd you get an agent? Around. Most people can't get an agent. How'd you get an agent?
Oh, well, okay. So I had a sister already working at Vogue. I mean, it was basically who you know. A lot of it is.
That's what I was afraid of.
But on the other hand, I mean, that was just my break. And then I moved here and I had to start all over. My agent dropped me in New York because I had to start all over here, and I had to go to find an agent here with my work. And I've been with a lot of agents in San Francisco. I mean, there's a lot less work here, but I've been a busy makeup artist here in San Francisco doing sometimes work out of New York, but mostly local. And, you know, I mean, it is a great field, and there's definitely, in a market like San Francisco, you can only have so many busy hair and makeup artists. You know, New York and L.A. are the bigger markets, so here there's only, like, a certain number of clients, and there's a certain number of jobs here.
I want to talk about the skills. I want to ask you about the skills.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, all the connections are all good, but I imagine you're awesome. What can you put into words when you see a face and you're going to do them over for whatever it be, a movie shoot or a private client, whatever? Tell me what goes through your mind. What is the checklist that goes through your mind as you decide what to do, what to say to the client to get them permission, get their permission to do? Tell me, take me inside your mind at that critical moment when you're sizing someone up.
Yeah. Well, I started as an artist doing a lot of watercolor. Mm-hmm. And So I have, like, the color wheel always in the back of my mind. Mm. But basically, I always ask the client, what's the occasion? What does she like to look like? What would she feel comfortable? Not everybody wants a red lip or a smoky eye. What does she want to look like? And then what's the occasion? And then what is she wearing? Because I want to look at her face. I can already tell, because I've been doing it 20 years, mm-hmm. I can already tell mm-hmm. what will work and what won't. And the age is important, mm-hmm. because after a certain age, you can't really put a lot of shimmery eyeshadows on an eyelid. It just shows more wrinkles.
Mm-hmm.
And also creases on the eye tend to, you have to kind of alter what you're going to do. So immediately I'm looking at someone's coloring, the shape of their face, what they're going to wear, where they're going, and features, you know, that I want to bring out. Like, I'm going to bring out an eye, I'm going to make the lip a little nude, or I'm going to bring out the lip. If they have a small lip, you have to do something that's going to, like, you add a little more gloss to make it look a little plumper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just things like that that you're assessing. I mean, I'm doing a lot of little assessments right away.
Great. Now, the previous caller mentioned men. Do you often do men? And if so, what are your thoughts about just anything unusual that might not be obvious about doing makeup on men?
Men, okay, so the only time I ever really do, I do a lot of men, yes. I mean, if you look at some websites I work at, yeah, there's men grooming. But real men in real life, like professional men, they hate makeup. I've done, like, mm-hmm. I've done portraits where, like, the CEO needs to have his portrait done, and they're like, they don't want to have makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly for celebrities or you know, or models, I do makeup on men, yes.
Tell me,
I would say the general man doesn't want to wear makeup.
Got it.
And actually, he immediately asked me to take it off as soon as I'm done.
I want to ask you one more question about career. Let's say there are about 7,000 people listening to the show right now, and there's going to be some percentage of them that would like to consider a career in makeup.
Mm-hmm.
What is something not obvious but important that you want to tell them?
Well, I think it's important to apprentice with someone if you want to get into the freelance world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also, taking a makeup course doesn't hurt, because you learn how to manipulate the face. I know there's a couple in the Bay Area. I went to school in London, but I started jumping right in doing makeup on people
mm-hmm.
By somebody who was really big in the 80s. And we learned her makeup, mm-hmm. her makeup style, which I then had to change. This was in the early 90s I started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would say a school is not money wasted, makeup school. And it's not the same as esthetician school. It's makeup school for photo shoots or film or theater.
Now, there is, I know for sure that there, in doing the research for this show, I am always very nervous about the for-profit schools. They're so expensive. And I've seen so many people,
yeah.
A rip-off at the Academy of Art and places like that, at San Francisco Art mm-hmm. Institute. I'm mentioning names because mm-hmm. so many graduates are just bereft in debt, and they can't get any work at all. I'm sure some are, and I'm sure they do wonderful things for some people, but my mm-hmm. own personal experience with my clients has not been good. So mm-hmm. I tried to look in this case, and I'm not like I'm some hard lefty who only will support public institutions, but in this case, I
yeah.
found that there are three community colleges that have well-regarded cosmetology programs. One is at Laney College, one is at Skyline College in San Francisco, and the other is at the College of San Mateo. Do you have any opinions about the worthiness of taking a course or a whole program through those places or other places that you're aware of?
Well, that wasn't the route that I took. I started assisting people as soon as I got to New York. I started assisting really at top. I mean, I'm talking mm-hmm. top tier. Pat McGrath, people who do runway shows, who you see their names on W, are doing covers.
How did you convince them? How did you convince somebody? You're absolutely right that being the apprentice to an eminent person, eminent in skills and eminent in reputation, so that she can refer you out, is critical. How did you convince, and don't tell me your sister worked for Vogue, is there anything else you did to that enabled you to apprentice with such a person?
You know, I think basically I don't really know how I got in, to be honest, now that I think about it. Like, I think it was my agent that helped me open those doors. My agent must have talked me up to their agents. And then once you get on the job, you have to perform, and you have to be the right person for the job. You have to be helpful. You have to be willing to do anything. I mean, all I did was wash brushes for a week for one of these makeup artists.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I didn't really get to do much, but I'm on set with Patrick and Marcia Yeh and people like that, and you learn. Okay. And you take everything in. And it's if you have, you do need to have a personality that people want to be around.
Okay. You have given us a great gift with your expertise. You're just what we needed because we were, as I said, the person who was supposed to be on the show was an expert in this area. You canceled last second. Would you like to give out your website in case people would like to contact you?
Absolutely. And I actually was just counseling a young 16-year-old. I'm like, she wanted to make the next step.
Wow.
She's already doing makeup for people at her prom and stuff.
Wow. Okay.
So I was like, girl, you're already, like, way ahead.
Great. What's your web address?
My website is RacineChristensen.com. That's just my name, RacineChristensen.com.
Christensen with an E-N on the end or O-N on the end?
Yeah, it's T-E-N-S-E-N. C-H-R-I-S-T-E-N-S-E-N. And my first name is Racine, like the French playwright, R-A-C-I-N-E.
So Racine, like the French playwright, Christensen with an E-N dot com.
Yeah, that's my website. And then my email is RacineChristensen@gmail.com.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm happy to give a career advice. I can only talk about, you know, my career path, and it's a little bit, I did have some lucky breaks, that's true, but it's been hard work, you know. I mean, 20 years, my sister's vote didn't get me where I am now, that's for sure.
Got it. You are a gracious person, and I'm particularly impressed that you gave out your website and email address to folks. You're paying it forward, and we appreciate it very much. You're an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco workforce.
Oh, I'm so honored. I love you guys. You're my favorite show on Sunday.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Thanks for the call. Barbara, I want you to have, we're going to move off this. I think we're reaching the capstone place here. So I'd like you to have the last word, though. Think from now of the perspective as really one of the nation's leading educators, as you think of, if you were talking to a group of people who are contemplating a career, whether it be in hair or makeup or skincare or whatever, what advice would you give them?
I would say you need to learn the skills clearly, but it's a great job because, as you said, that's something that women will give up last when they're cutting back. But you need to bring your A game around how you provide the services. Even though the services are great, it's got to be your personality. It's got to be the atmosphere of your shop. And you need to continue to keep up with all the changes that happen because makeup today is not the way it was back in the 80s and 90s.
Thank you very much. So now, as I promised, I think we've exhausted. We have only a few minutes left. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I am very grateful to the people who have donated money to KELW to come and have, and as a thank you gift, they come to have brunch and they're sitting here in the studio. And one of the people before we started the show, she asked if I would talk about under the radar careers, and we have very little time. And we do have calls on the line, but I at least wanted to honor her request. And one that I'd like to talk about is, and I picked one now that is related to what, Barbara, you can comment on, and that is school computer coordinator. You know, I am sad to see that still there are many computers sitting in schools, and they're not being fully utilized. And it can really help to have a person on site, may not have to be there 5 days a week or whatever, to train teachers, to do whatever it can to make computers happen. Now, I don't know for a fact how pervasive those jobs are, whether they exist or a job could be created. Barbara, is that a realistic option to try to get a job as either at the school level or district level, or whatever, helping to help those teachers utilize whatever the device, iPads or desktops or whatever, more effectively?
Absolutely. It's a very emerging career. We would call them technology coaches.
Mm.
And most schools now, with the additional funding that they're getting under LCFF, local control funding formula, are hiring more technology coaches. Because if a teacher wants to integrate technology into the classroom, which every teacher should want to do today, and it doesn't work, it's too easy to abandon it and go back to what you know, which is open your books to page 42. Want someone on site who
right.
you can call and can come in and show you specific techniques, specific websites, specific tools that you can use and connect it to what your curriculum is. It's not about the device. It's about better teaching and connecting it to your curriculum in a way that's engaging for kids and iPads are way more engaging than us standing up in front of the room.
As usual, I try to cram everything in. I have a call. I want to take this call. We've been waiting a long time. But there's one other under-the-radar-ish career that's education-related that while you're here I wanted to talk about. Everybody thinks about being a teacher or even a school psychologist, but one of the faster growing areas is speech and language therapists because of the explosion in autism and just in general greater awareness and more diagnosis in the special ed laws. What do you have to say about Alan Gold is one of the people who is here is one of the in the audience, and he is an eminent school psychologist in Marin County at Kenfield and Tiburon and Belvedere. Would you go over to the microphone, please, and you comment on this because I think you probably know more. Alan, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you.
Okay, so what do you know about the present and future of speech and language therapists in school? Schools.
I work very closely with our speech and language therapists. I work with autistic kids, and so do they. They do a lot of very helpful group work, dealing with pragmatics, which is often a real problem for autistic kids, just learning how to communicate on a practical level. I've seen tremendous improvement in kids through the work of speech and language therapists.
Am I correct? My notion is that it requires inordinate patience because it is a very slow and often repetitive process. Is that the quintessential quality that a speech language therapist needs to have?
Yeah. Well, frankly, anybody in education needs a lot of patience, and because the process can be slow. But anytime anybody's working with a student who has challenges such as autism or learning disabilities or intellectual deficiencies, it's a slow process.
We've only got 2 minutes left, I'll thank you, Alan, for stepping in. Let me try to get a quick call in. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm going to ask you to tell me your problem in 30 seconds. Hello, it's your turn on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I have a work conundrum. My company is really in trouble in restructuring near the bottom, and even though it would work out for me cosmically, do you think I should wait for them to call me in and lay me off and risk being asked to resign, or should I be preemptive and just move on?
Well, I would do a combination, given the limited time. I would try to be as wise. You say cosmically it would be great to try to save the company. So I'd want you to redouble your efforts to try to do what you can to save the company. But because you're sounding like statistically the chances are it's going to go down the tubes anyway, it seems like the cosmically balanced approach is to put as much effort as you can during the time you have to do that, but also start to put your antenna out, at least in a moderate way. Let everybody you know that you're looking. But you're not trying to abandon the ship. You're trying to strike that balance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm actually right there. So just good to hear confirmation.
Awesome. Well, I love when people use the term cosmic. That's another core principle that I think is so important. We tend to either think pragmatically, this is what's in it for me, or it's the law, so I'm going to do it because it's the law, or it's a societal norm. But cosmic means that you recognize that there are implications in terms of all of humankind that are larger than even what's societally right. It is the largest kind of thinking. And the more we can bring that kind of thing of what is really right for all, not only the people, but just what, in terms of universal values, what feels right, we would live in a much better place. So you are the perfect person to have ended this show with, and I thank you very much for the call.
And
great. And I want to thank you, Barbara Nemco, for your comments as the ultimate consumer of people in the beauty career and bringing in your incredible army. There are artilleries of armies that don't have as much armamentarium as you do.
Nothing more fun like being publicly outed on radio.
You were gracious as usual about it. And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr. All of the donors, thank you very much, who have come here to watch the show, donated to KALW Work with Marty Nemco. And, of course, all you, my dear listeners, for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on callers, probably quite a bit more than I did today. I only had time for one, sort of. And I'm going to share 13 metaphors to help your career. People learn a lot from metaphor. Sometimes that's really powerful. And 10 questions to help you decide if and when to retire. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.